Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is going to be an empowering hour. The latest on health and healing, always citing the peer-reviewed scientific literature. I'm going to talk about what happens when you eat that hamburger. Also, how much danger is it in the personal care products that you put on your babies? Regular exercise in middle age does a lot to protect us later in life. Sugar in your brain. Is Alzheimer's disease actually type 3 diabetes? By Dr. Hardik. We're going to talk about this and a lot more on today's program. Then we're going to look at some environmental issues. I'm going to talk about a toxin that is 7,000 times more powerful than carbon dioxide at warming the earth and is produced by humans. Well, gee whiz, we didn't know this. What do we do about that? A commentary on America's the most inhumane developed country on the planet. Are we going to let this stay that way? By Kevin Zees and Dr. Margaret Flowers. There's a 6,000-page report that has been completed on the CIA torture. It's been suppressed for a year. So, why did this $40 million produced report showing all the serious wrongdoing that does not threaten national security, why does President Obama want to keep it hidden? We'll talk about that. Also, why is it that every single country in the world that's a member of the UN signed on to deal effectively with clean water as a basic human right? It says it in the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, and it says very clearly that, quote, the human right to safe drinking water and sanitation. Everyone's on board. Oh, except the United States. President Obama, you don't want someone in the world to have clean water? You don't think it's a basic right? Could it have anything to do with all the people that gave you money in your campaign who also want to privatize water? Could it? Wow. We're going to stick our hand in that beehive today. And then, if time permits, we're going to take a look at Clear Channel is removing from San Francisco the only commercial progressive talk stations and replacing with more right-wing talk. So what does that mean for people who live in L.A., where they're removing KTLK, a very popular station, and they're flipping it over to right-wing that's going to host Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Glenn Beck, and other right-wing talkers. But they're also doing the same thing in San Francisco. So hold on. In L.A., we have KPFK, and in Berkeley, we have KPFA. Good news, right? No, not so much. Why? Why aren't they even talking about it? I'll tell you that coming up. And finally, 41 scientists warn President Obama's administration against burning trees to produce electricity. You didn't know they were burning trees? Thing Progress, Ari Phillips wants you to know. As you see, we take on a lot of different topics here, ones that I believe are important that can allow us better perspective. Let's begin. You've all seen the ads. They're everywhere on television showing people munching down on those big burgers, and the burgers just keep getting bigger and bigger. Now it's not uncommon to see them giving you a steak burger with sausage on it and eggs on it and cheese on it. Gee whiz. What could that possibly do to the human body with all those arachidonic acid producing, joint swelling, brain killing nutrients? But here's what Boston University has to say. Quote, Americans are increasingly eating more of their meals prepared away from home, and this is particularly true among African Americans, who also have higher rates of obesity than other Americans. Young adults tend to eat out more often as fast food restaurants, and these establishments are more often found in minority neighborhoods. A new study have shown that frequent eating out is associated with greater weight gain than eating at home, but little previous research has focused on whether specific types of foods eaten at fast food and full food restaurants have a greater effect. Researchers at Boston University's Sloan Epidemiological Center looked at all these restaurants and their food on young African-American women. The results are published in the peer review Ethnicity and Disease and provide evidence that frequently eating hamburgers from restaurants is associated with a higher risk of obesity, higher intake of sugar, sweet, and soft drinks, which are consumed together with restaurant foods, was also independently associated with obesity risk. The study was conducted using data from the Black Women's Health Study of 59,000 African-American women. Okay, what have we learned from this? Well, we've learned that it's not just African-American young women who are obese and suffering from diabetes. The largest number of people suffering from obesity and diabetes are Caucasians who are eating the food at home or taking it home to eat it. And these people have overly narrowly defined the research. We have obesity across all spectrums in diabetes in the United States, except those who are health-minded. And what has not given credit is the enormous number of people within the Latino and African-American community, specifically the African-American community, that are not only vigorous in their health commitments to themselves, but also wherever possible, do outreach to help other groups. Let me give you an example. And you never had this happening in the Caucasian community. I mean, never, not once in my entire career. It's happened 1,000 times in the African American community. Woman comes into my office. She says she's there on behalf of a church in Brooklyn. The church mainly is made up of people from the Caribbean, but they have a lot of health problems. Well, I come out and do a workshop, and the pastor and everybody wants to do this together as a whole congregation. I said, sure. I go out. There, it's a middle of August. There's no air conditioning. It's boiling hot in there. And the place is packed, standing room only. And we go on for 3 hours, and I give them a protocol, and we follow it up every month, and they begin to lose weight, and they're changing their diets, and they're sharing recipes, they're exercising together. At the end of a year, the health consequences was phenomenal. Someone hears about it at a Seventh-day Adventist church, all African-Americans up in Westchester. I go up there, and the pastor, whose family's not healthy, none of them are healthy. I didn't see a single healthy person in the church. But that one we filmed because we wanted a beginning and an end point. And over a six-month period, together, they would bring in recipes. They would exercise together in small groups. They would motivate one another. They would have phone calling. If you felt like you were going to fall off the wagon and eat something or drink something you shouldn't, you would call some people, and suddenly 10 people, there was a 10-person support system that would call you and re-encourage you back or even go over to your house. I explained how you should go in together and clean out people's junk. Just throw it all away. Don't give it away. Not a good idea to give a toxin to someone else. Just throw it away and start fresh. How to save money. And by the way, the average savings was over 35% off their normal food expenditures, because eating healthy is less expensive than eating unhealthy foods. And every study has shown that. Now, that's not true necessarily if you're taking lots of supplements, but it is true if you simply want a really good healthy diet. A pound of legumes compared to a pound of meat, not only in cost but in health benefits. But this was all explained in weekly meetings, so people really got an education. The key was an underlying education, but a support system. makes all the difference in the world when you're being supported by a community as well as your family or your essential others. The results at the end of that period of time were so dramatic that the pastor sent to the national office of the lead church of the Seventh-day Adventists saying, we just had remarkable benefits. People were diabetic or no longer diabetic. People had high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, are no longer elevated, normal blood pressure off their meds. Their doctors took them off their meds. People who were morbidly obese or normal weight, they've lost 50, 100, 150 pounds. One person lost 200 pounds. People who weren't exercising or able to exercise, people had arthritis, no longer have it. People who are suffering from memory loss, no longer have insomnia, no longer have insomnia. The results were just phenomenal. And then another church in Harlem, and another church, another church, another church. Everywhere, it was like every day I was running around doing these lectures, of course, free and as a public service. But the effort was tremendous at the grassroots level within the communities. And when I put the word out that I would be happy to come into any congregation, any religious congregation, there was one person who came forward, Dr. Ibrahim Malik, who is the spiritual leader of thousands upon tens of thousands of Muslims in the greater New York area, a very progressive-minded person, very intelligent, Harvard-trained, educated, and taught there. And he's a good human being, very athletic. And he said, I'll take the protocol, and I'll share it within all of these different mosques. Now, I haven't done a follow-up except with him. He's in his mid to late 80s now and still in outstanding health. And that worked, but not a single Caucasian church or of anyone, anywhere, and nor any of the Latinos. So here is the issue. When you go to talk about and you look at something in a, oh, you know, well, young African-American women are, you know, eating more fast foods, that doesn't start out there. It starts at home. And if you don't have a support system, because the teenager has a support system, and they're most of them, not everyone, but most, the vast majority, are going to be following a similar lifestyle. If they all go out at lunch instead of eating the crappy cafeteria food and the good food, or they eat bad food, that's where it starts. And then if they, after school, they go to a place to socialize and drink soft drinks and eat bad food, that's where it continues. So by the time they get home at night, even if a mother or father has prepared a good meal for them, frequently they're not hungry. They're full of the soft and sugary and the salty and crunchies. So there has to be a whole rethinking of how we eat, how we socialize, the rules that we have to start establishing in some spiritual and disciplines that are necessary in order to get rid of diabetes, obesity, heart disease. In younger people, it's epidemic. And I'm willing to help any congregation, any religious group that does it as a group, not just one person in a group, but where the whole congregation wants to do health, wants to get themselves in great shape. And we will do it. And the whole congregation. And what's nice is, this is absolutely in alignment with their religious principles. Every religion has good health and happiness a part of it. And so showing how to get there, showing how to resolve issues without violence or without blaming, and showing the positive way of dealing with the crisis in our life, plus the exercise, plus the diet, it all works together. And then you're more likely to stick with a healthy program if all of you did it together and you're supporting one another. It's great to have supporting systems. That's why I encourage this to happen. So if you are a member of a congregation and you want to bring this up to the leaders of your congregation and get it discussed, if you want to do it, then just reach out. You can contact my office, irrespective of where I'm at. I'm frequently on the road filming where I'm at now. But you can reach out and you can speak with Jeremy in my office at 646-926-5422. And we will get people healthy. Babies are at risk from personal care products containing harmful parabens. Now, who says this? The CDC says it. As of today, published in the peer-reviewed journal Environmental Science and Technology, quote, through lotions, shampoos, and other personal care products, infants and toddlers are likely becoming exposed to potentially harmful substances called parabens, P-A-R-A, parabens, B-E-N-S, at an even higher level than adult women in the U.S., researchers found. So, they looked at 170 samples of makeup, lotion, shampoos, and other products, and 20 of those items were for babies, and most of them tested for parabens. So what's the takeaway message? Take the time to go into your local health food store or food co-op. Look at the actual ingredients, and a paraben will be listed. And if there's any chemicals in there, then don't buy it. Only buy the shampoos and the baby lotions, and if they're really good baby lotions, they've got coconut oil, which is the best oil you can put on your baby's skin. And that way you stay away from the phthalates, P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-S. The phthalates are really bad, and the parabens are bad. So that's what we can do, and pass it on. And for those who have problems with their bowels, especially in infants, a double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized trial and a multi-center trial that was published in a prestigious medical journal showed the following. Probiotics can reduce bowel problems, especially in babies. This is published in Pediatrics. So what's the takeaway message? If you're breastfeeding, make sure that you get your probiotics every day. They'll be passed through into your system, into the baby, through the breast milk. If your baby's formula feeding, look for a probiotic baby food or baby formula. They have them now. They're not the ones you find in your major supermarkets or box stores, but they are found in designer lines in health food stores and food co-ops. And this was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study, so you can get rid of a lot of enterocolitis and other bowel conditions that can be very painful to the child and by probiotics. And finally, the wolfberry can help offer flu protection. This was this study, I'll quote it, and this was published in the Journal of Nutrition, a major peer-reviewed journal, and it was done at Tufts University and also the Jean Mayer USDA Human Nutrition Center on Aging. It says this, consumption of wolfberries, also known as goji berries, G-O-G-A-I, goji. By the way, always wash your goji berries. In fact, I wash every berry, even the dried one. Why? Because I don't know if anyone washed these from the time they were harvested. And if they were harvested and there was parasites, bacteria, viruses on the person's hands, which there definitely would be, then you have to go through the pickers, the packers, the sorters, and the baggers. And there could be an awful lot of contamination. Just wash them for, you know, a few seconds underwater. That's fine. In any case, the goji berry, also called the wolfberry, quote, is associated with increasing protection against influenza. Now, that's good. This was a laboratory study, and here's what it says. Wolfberries are rich, complex carbohydrates known as polysaccharides, as well as rich in vitamins, carotenoids, and flavonoids. Future studies in rodent models would be necessary to understand which components appear to be stimulating the dendritic cells. We observe higher antibody response and better protection against flu, as indicated by light weight loss in the older mice that consume wolfberries. While previous studies have shown that wolfberries bolster immune response in mice, our results introduce their potential to reduce age-related risk and severity of the flu virus in the presence of the vaccine, end quote. So, one more good thing. And Daily Oklahoman from Oklahoma City says, mind-body therapy, man, they've never used that out there. Mind Body Therapy and other complementary approaches to cancer treatment are becoming mainstream, and with good reason. The benefits are hard to ignore. Mind you, this is a mainstream newspaper saying this. Quote, in a recent study of women with breast cancer, University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, patients who practice yoga reported better physical function, reduced fatigue, and a significant drop in cortisol levels that usually are associated with stress. They also were more likely to perceive positive life changes from their cancer experience. From the study, quote, mind-body therapy has a huge role. I've seen incredible results in managing overall immune function and quality of life as they are going through treatment. If a patient is feeling more hopeful or empowered in their care, their outcome is going to be better, end quote. And that was just one of the people involved. So, mind-body makes a difference. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and nutrition. This just in, the International Monetary Fund wants you to pay 71% in income tax. And this is from Sovereign Valley Farm, Simon Black. He says, the International Monetary Fund just dropped another bombshell. They want to have a one-off capital levy on all private wealth as an exceptional measure to restore debt sustainability across insolvent countries. It's called the Revenue Maximizing Top Income Tax Rates. Here's why I'm opposed to this. It's simple. We don't need more taxes. We should actually have a reduction. We should not have a personal income tax at all. What we should have, if we were responsible and not ideological or political, we would have all corporate taxes instead of being supposedly paid at 35%, have a 20% where you could not deduct anything. No offshoring, no tax havens. All money that had been made offshore had to be brought back and taxed at 20%. Now there's $31 trillion sitting in bank accounts around the world owned by Microsoft and all the major corporations in the United States, oil companies and everyone else. $31 trillion. So you take 20% and they get to keep the rest. They can bring it back. That's money back in the United States that they can use. And hopefully some of that would help the rest of us. But what if they didn't have $2,000 an hour tax lawyers figuring out how they don't have to pay any taxes on $8 billion in income like General Motors or General Electric? And how about Google? Look at how much actual corporate income tax the top Fortune 500 companies paid. They pay little to nothing. That's because there's a 70,000-page tax code that allows them to circumvent this. If you're a small business person, you have to pay your taxes. If you're an individual, you have to pay. If you earn, you have to pay your taxes, unless you're below that level. We wouldn't, and that's understandable, because you're not going untaxed. Sorry to inform Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity, some people may be making so little that they fall below the federal income tax guidelines, but every time they buy something, they pay sales tax. When they pay for their electric bill, it's taxed. Their phone bill is taxed. When they buy service station petrol, it's taxed. When they go into a movie theater, it's taxed. When you start looking at virtually everything a person buys nearly outside of their home, it's taxed. It's not as if they're not taxed. But then again, they had the unfortunate situation of being in a predicament where they'd love to be able to make enough disposable income to pay some taxes. But when you're paid minimum wage and you're working two jobs or three jobs and you don't have quality time for anything in life except just survival mode, then you're not going to be looked upon the same way as those people who make plenty of money and can pay taxes. Then they hire lawyers to make sure they don't. So why don't we once and for all just stop this game? And that's all it is a game. Because if you taxed everyone at one time, 71% of your total wealth, who do you think is going to get that money? When Ireland just exited the European Union, which is the International Monetary Fund, the European Central Bank, and their being in their severe austerity program, who do you think pays all that money, when all those jobs were downsized and all those social benefits were taken away and pensions were cut and public services were cut and health benefits were cut, who didn't get cut? Who got 100 cents on the dollar? So when they said we need a $10 billion bailout, that $10 billion went to the banks. That went to the very people, all of it, 100%. But the public doesn't understand that. They think, oh, well, Greece is getting a $7 billion bailout. No, Greece didn't get a $7 billion bailout. The bondholders got the bailout. The hedge funds got the bailout. The banks, Goldman Sachs, got the bailout. The people in Greece, one out of every seven academic and professionals is now below the poverty level. Go to Athens and see how many people in the evening, after dusk, are looking in garbage bins for food. No, everything we're doing in the world is wrong when it comes to how we're redistributing wealth up and creating debt for everyone else, and the debt that the poor and the middle class, working middle class, and the upper middle class, you're paying for all these bailouts. And it's wrong. We should have one tax and shrink government to the size it's necessary for it to function in protecting the public and serving its needs. 50% of all government would be reduced, and that would be a good thing. Unless you think that the military-industrial complex with $1.5 trillion in money and the medical-industrial complex with $3.2 trillion in money are good things. Between the two, you're at over $4.5 trillion, and 80% of that is just useless to anyone. They don't make us healthier, happier, or safer. It's all about profit into their own industries and companies. And yet we're told that we have to be spied upon, overregulated, overruled, and made to fear everything because we're not smart enough to figure something out or to be trusted to share anything. Hence, OPEC is the rule of the day. Openness and transparency and democratic principles are not to be found. So no, someday they'll get this thing right. Right now they got it wrong. And here's something else they got it wrong. Stop with the biofuels. They've always been a fraud. They've never been accurate. And if you look at the politics of it, you understand it. This is where 41 scientists warn Obama against burning trees to produce electricity. From Ari Phillips and Think Progress, quote, this week, 41 leading scientists, quote, sent a letter to the Environmental Protection Agency calling on the agency to use caution when determining what biomass, meaning wood or plant materials, to use for power plants. The letter states that burning trees to produce electricity increases carbon emissions and contributes to air pollution. Burning other biomass, such as perennial grasses or harvest residues that can either grow quickly or are not needed for other purposes, is quite different from burning forests. And while the biomass industry argues that since trees grow back, in 100 years, that they offer a carbon-neutral form, there's nothing neutral in destroying large masses of tall-growth forest. No. Who are you talking with? Do you think we're all idiots? The biomass industry has been on the take from day one in promoting this carbon-neutral form of energy. So here's what they say. By substituting trees for coal, power plants avoid fossil fuel carbon emissions. That's a lie. Quote, but trees are approximately half water by weight, which means they contain less potential energy per unit of carbon emissions than coal and other fossil fuels do. In other words, to get the same amount of energy from trees as from fossil fuels, many more trees have to be burned, resulting in 40% more, let me repeat that, 40% more carbon emissions at the smokestack per unit of energy generated. And even if trees are replanted immediately, it takes decades for a tree to grow and absorb all the carbon released from burning of just one tree, end quote. Now, the EPA is in the final stages of a 3-year process of developing rules. Of course, those rules will be completely controlled, manipulated behind the scenes by the wonky wonkies who work for the special interest groups. You and I are left out of the discussion. So these 41 scientists wrote a letter about all this. and sent it to the president and to the EPA. The letter expressed concern that the accounting methodology proposed by the EPA, for example, taking credit for forest growth that would be happening anyways, as it often cited as justification for claims about carbon benefits associated with wood pellets made from U.S. forests, is an accounting error. The letter states that forests are carbon sinks, and diminishing them is the same as increasing carbon emissions. Quote, consequently, a power plant that burns trees cannot be given credit for forest growth and carbon sequestration that would be happening anyway, end quote. So, what we should be doing is this. We should allocate 100 million trees be planted in as many states as possible to create carbon sinks that would then hold the water, hold the carbon, and reduce global warming. And we could put people to work in all those states planting them. That would be a good thing. Next up, a 6,000-page report on CIA torture has now been suppressed for 1 year. It costs $40 million to produce. It documents serious wrongdoing and doesn't threaten national security. So why does President Obama insist that we, the people, not know anything about it? The Senate Intelligence Committee voted to adopt a 6,000-page report on the CIA rendition, detention, and the interrogation program that led to torture. Its contents include details on each prisoner in the CIA custody, the conditions of their confinement, whether they were tortured, the intelligence they provided, and the degree to which the CIA lied about its behavior to overseers. Senator Dianne Feinstein declared it one of the most significant oversight efforts in American history, noting it contains, quote, startling details and raises critical questions. Okay, well, Senator Feinstein, why haven't you insisted it be released? Why are you siding with the Obama administration? Isn't it ironic? It was Senator John McCain who had this to say, quote, what I've learned confirms for me what I have always believed and insisted to be true, that the cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment of prisoners is not only wrong in principle and a stain on our country's conscience, but also an ineffective and unreliable means of gathering intelligence. It is therefore my hope that this committee will take whatever steps necessary to finalize and declassify this report so that all Americans can see the record for themselves, which I believe will finally close this painful chapter of our country, end quote. And by the way, they're not alone. So, I know this causes heartburn and probably a giant hemorrhoid in you, Sean Hannity. Since you've never seen anything the government does, it seems to bother you when it comes to the military being right and get them to torture someone in order to get the next bomb they're going to plant. But here's who believes the report should be declassified. General Joseph Hoar, former commander of U.S. Central Command. General Charles Krulak, former commandant of the Marine Corps. General David Mattox, former commander-in-chief, U.S. Army, Europe. General Barry McCaffrey, former assistant chairman, Joint Chiefs of Staff. General Merrill McPeak, former chief of staff, U.S. Air Force. Lieutenant General Robert Gard, Vice Admiral Lee Gunn, former Inspector General, Department of the Navy. Lieutenant General Arlene Jameson, former Deputy Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Strategic Command. Lieutenant General Charles Ostlot, former Deputy Chairman, NATO Military Committee. Lieutenant General Harry Soyster, former Director, Defense Intelligence Agency. Lieutenant General James Thompson, former Director for Estimates, Defense Intelligence Agency. Major General Paul Eaton, former Commanding General of the command charged with reestablishing Iraq security forces. By the way, this is just a tiny list I have. So here we have some of the most formidable, respected, and credentialed military commanders all saying, hey, release the report. We, the American people, need to know the truth about our CIA, this renegade, corrupt organization. John F. Kennedy was right. It should be thrown into 1,000 pieces. Is so corrupt. Now, for this part of our program, I want to share some commentaries because I believe most people are not familiar with the information at hand. This is from Kevin Aziz and Dr. Margaret Flowers from Alternet. The article which we are posting is America is the most inhumane developed country on the planet. Are we going to let it stay that way? Wow. Let's see what they say and how they justify it. And then we can have a perspective on it. And by the way, just for everyone who understands, we are publishing somewhere in the neighborhood of about 100 different articles every 24 hours. But we scan the world to find those that have progressive themes that empower people, whereby looking at that particular article, you're going to feel good about yourself. You're going to be able to have tools to make changes you otherwise wouldn't. So please go to progressiveradionetwork.com, look at all the articles. Also, I realize that so many people, you have no idea how many people listen to this radio program each day over a telephone in Canada or North America. Because there's so many more people wanting on, they've included two new lines. Let me give you those numbers very quickly. 401-347-0456, 401-347-0456, or 712-432-7231, 712-432-7231. Now this week marked the 65th anniversary of the signing of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It was drafted by a commission of the United Nations that was chaired by Eleanor Roosevelt. Now, the convention became effective in 1951. The United States finally ratified it in 1988. It was signed by George H.W. Bush. What would it be like if people in the United States knew they had these rights and demanded to have them realized? We believe it would be very difficult to get by this. This would be a different world. The economy more equitable, with full employment, health care for all, no people without housing, more humane on every front. Instead, this week, an annual report from the Credit Suisse Bank ranked the United States the most unequal of all advanced countries. As a general guide for understanding human rights, there are five principles that should be applied to every policy. Universality, equity, transparency, accountability, and participation. In a nutshell, universality means that policies apply to all people. You're not excluded because you don't have the same education or you're not the same race or religious view. No. Equity means that people have what they need in order to be at the same level as others. And participating means that people have input into the policies that affect their lives. Harriet Tubman once said, "I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more if only they knew they were slaves." Similarly, we have human rights, and our rights are being violated every day. Yet, do you really think the average American is aware of this? Wealth inequality has worsened under the Obama presidency. Now, this is remarkable because historically, after an economic collapse, the wealth divide closes during the recovery phase. According to the 2013 report, in the United States, the bottom 90% of the population own 24% of all privately held wealth, whereas in most of the developed world, the bottom 90% owns 40%. So the degree of wealth concentration in the United States is extraordinary, end quote. There hasn't been any recovery at all. I'm out on the road. I'm filming. I'm gone back to do additional input on Poverty Inc. and the role that the banking community and those companies controlled by the hidden hand, those very wealthy people, very powerful people, who want even more. And when they want something, they get it because they know the system. They've gamed it. If they don't want a law, they'll get ALEC at the local level, state level, and they'll get their hordes of 100,000 lobbyists and consultants at the national level to make sure that that lull that limits them, their ability to pollute, their ability to manipulate a market, their ability to have a double standard. If you and I want to buy a stock, we have to pay for it. They get margin. How much margin? Right now, there's over $400 billion in margin that's out there on behalf of the hedge funds. Why do they get that? Because of how they work the system cooperatively and collectively together. We can't. If we own a house and we can't pay the mortgage, we lose the house. If we own a small business and we can't keep up, we lose our business and our life savings. If you break the law, if you want to help a drug dealer take some of his ill-gotten gains and put it through your business, a laundromat or a car wash, so they can make it look clean, you go to prison for 20 years. When they launder money, $800 billion, one bank, Wachovia, nobody gets hurt. They pay a fine, they're fine after that. When they fail in their stupid policies, we give them $20 trillion to get out of debt. When they want to buy up all their competition, we give them debt to do that. This is the inequality that we're facing today. And yet you wouldn't know that by watching most of the mainstream, or for that matter, the alternative media. Public policies have continued to funnel wealth to the top while cutting the social infrastructure. Now, a woman I've had on this program many times, Ellen Brown, explains that the Federal Reserve Act prevents quantitative easing. The $85 billion created every month from being used to invest in businesses and create jobs. No, it doesn't go to jobs, doesn't go to businesses, doesn't go to help homeowners. She describes the act as being, quote, drafted by bankers to create a banker's bank that would serve their interest. It is in their own private club, and its legal structure keeps all non-members out. So, instead of assisting you and I, the quantitative easing has gone to Wall Street and has been used for financing trading that places our entire economy at risk of collapse. And that's unfortunate. We should be campaigning against all 12 Federal Reserve banks. Taxpayers need to take back the power to create money in a transparent way. And they can, after all. It is the Treasury that should print and distribute money interest-free. That way we wouldn't have all this debt. Since early 2010, the Obama administration with Congress has pursued austerity with the federal budget, which is the opposite of what is needed in order to stimulate the economy and reduce employment. Let me just put this as simple as possible. When you look at the deficit hawks like Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles and the Peterson Foundation, their whole mission is to end social insurances. They want to take over Social Security because there's trillions of dollars they would make, be able to use. They want to gut unemployment benefits, food stamps, Medicare, Head Start, get rid of it. Yeah, but now exactly how does that austerity program re-stimulate the economy? How does that happen? It doesn't, never has, and it won't. You have to put money back into the economies. It was about 9 months ago that I did a report here on this station. I looked at a housing project in the Midwest that was an enviable place for 10,000 people to live. And they had a great opportunity there. But over time, when a lot of people wanted to move, and it was mainly African Americans, when a lot of Caucasians wanted to move to the suburbs, and therefore the suburbs now were little municipalities, they were paying their property taxes to these municipalities in the suburbs, not to the main city, then there was not the money to maintain this place. So garbage piled up and broken water pipes wouldn't get fixed. And when doors were broken, nobody would fix them, so security was virtually non-existent. And in time, crime increased, and the number one victim of that crime were people who were living there. Nobody was happy. And I said, before you condemn the people who were there as if it's their fault when something breaks or doesn't work and they have to live with it, what do you imagine that Fifth Avenue would be if there was no garbage pickup and no windows, pipes, water would be fixed? When a building ran out of oil, it would stay out of oil for 3 months. Water main break, you cannot fix it. What do you think Fifth Avenue would look like? It would look like a ghetto. Nobody would want to live there. But in our society, we create green zones and we create red zones. And the green zones are for people of means to have a quality of life and security, and everything is maintained. If it snows, the trucks and plows are out. If the road has cracks, crevices, potholes, they're fixed. Everything is done to maintain a higher quality of life. But what if you're not in a green zone? Well, then you get what you can, and it's not the same. And that's the unfortunate part of this inequality business. And that's what happens. So now we have an administration that's actively pursuing austerity. In effect, they want us to go through the same austerity that the Greeks have gone through and are still going through, and the Spaniards, and the Portuguese, and the French. Pascal Robert writes that this year alone, the sequester forced $9.9 billion in cuts to Medicare and $840 million in cuts to special education programs, $400 million in cuts to Head Start, and $2 million was slashed from housing aid. He calls this Obama's war on the poor. And Robert Reich, someone I know that people in this audience respect, calls the new budget dumb because it, quote, doesn't close tax loopholes for wealthy, restore food stamps to poor, or extend unemployment benefits for jobless. He calls for investment in repairing our failing infrastructure, which would solve critical food safety concerns and create jobs. The economic trend looks bad for most of us. College students are graduating with higher levels of debt each year into an employment environment in which they are forced to delay their desired career path and work for poverty wages. And while the official unemployment rate for college graduates has dropped, that doesn't consider the 1.7 million who've stopped looking for work. And you've got to add that on to the 3.5 million, so you're up over 5 million Americans who once worked who aren't, and yet they're not considered in any of the unemployment figures. Well, then, how can you accept a 7% unemployment? It's insane. It's 22%. But that would make us look like a banana republic, a failed nation if we told the truth. A combination of poverty wages, the foreclosure crisis, and the buying up of distressed homes by very rich billionaire investors has caused the percentage of renters to rise dramatically to 35% of households, the highest in 10 years. And more than half the renters are paying over 30% of their incomes on rent alone. It is a landlord's market, and some renters are wondering what to do. And there's no end in sight to this economic situation. It only gets worse. The simultaneous transfer of wealth to the top and austerity measures for everyone else looks like social suicide. But it seems that those in power are sick with greed and cannot help themselves. A person I've had on this program many times is Chris Hedges. He describes the problem to Paul Jay of The Real News this week in an interview called The Pathology of the Rich, saying, quote, they will extract more and more and more because they have no self-imposed limits without understanding the economic, political, and social consequences of what they're doing. The wealth divide is created by policy choices made by those in power. We can see how they rig the economy for their wealthy donors and big business interests at the expense of local businesses and entrepreneurs and workers and the poor. Right now, this economic rigging is playing out in the secret negotiations of the Trans-Pacific Partnership that I talk about and ask you, please let your legislators say, no, we will not support on any level at all, the Trans-Pacific Partnership or the Atlantic Partnership. We're witnessing, however, the acceleration of a global neoliberal economic agenda through the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TAFTA, the Atlantic version. In Europe, a document was leaked that described the strategy of lying to the people of Europe and the management of stakeholders, social media and transparency, to give a false appearance of listening to them and silencing them. At the same time, their TAFTA communication strategy will promise jobs and economic growth when we know from past corporate trade agreements like NAFTA and the Clintons behind that, it was just the opposite. The Clintons sold out the unions, and yet the unions continued to support the Clintons, including supporting Hillary Clinton, but would not support Dennis Kucinich. I'll never forget watching the debates in August, and it was either Cleveland or Columbus in Ohio, and when asked about trade, it was only Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul who said that it was a bad deal, and Kucinich said, "I would get us out of all of our treaties completely." I don't think people understood how important his statement was. He had the courage to be on the right side of truth in history. But he was Dennis Kucinich, and he was not Hillary Clinton. He did not have the charisma. He didn't have the appeal with women voters. And as a result, look how poorly he did. This is not unusual. So we shouldn't have these negotiations. We shouldn't have the World Trade Organization. We shouldn't have all these treaties. We should not have 90% of the Fortune 500 companies paying little or no income tax or taxes on their profits at all. We shouldn't have $31 trillion sitting in offshore accounts of American companies. We shouldn't have a 70,000-page tax code that every major corporation uses to make sure they don't pay any taxes at all. And yet these are the same industries that are subsidized by we the people. An example, the energy cartels this past year received in excess of $1 trillion in various subsidies of different types, or not just this year, in recent past. And yet there is one renewable energy that is dirt cheap, non-polluting, and it's geothermal. And we have 10,000 times more geothermal available to us than we do the other, except for coal, and we're not putting any money into it. Could you imagine if we actually came to our senses and just charged no personal income tax, but instead a corporate tax, that you could not deduct anything, you would eliminate the IRS in that entire bureaucracy and save billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars a year, you would get about a $1.5 trillion in additional revenue than what we have now. You would stop all subsidies of all major corporations. That saves another $500 billion. You would get universal health care and eliminate a $3 trillion industry, the medical industrial complex. You put a fair payment to the American Treasury for every trade on Wall Street of just 1%. A 1% on every single trade would bring in billions of dollars. So in a period of a single year, you could put us into a positive cash flow, have people retain more of what they earn, have real equality, and then start the process of de-ghettoizing America and rebuilding our infrastructure. These are the things we could do. We have the insight, the skills, the technology. We just don't have the political will because we keep listening to the wrong people who continue to tell us that they're smarter than we are and they know better. The latest poll shows that only 8% approval of Congress. They actually are just 1% above real estate brokers. Well, I still think that's too optimistic at 8%. I have no confidence in Congress at all. But I do have faith in the American people, and especially when they awaken to the truth. I'm Gary Noll, and that's what we try to do each day, is bring you different insights so they can empower you to make better choices. Thank you all very much for listening, and remember, the archives have all the progressive commentary hours and conversations with remarkable minds, all the things that you could benefit from. You can go there at any time and download programs. Have a nice day, and thank you very much for listening.